The Team Never Quit podcast is sponsored by Navy Federal Credit Union. Navy Federal Credit Union has the tools and services to help you put your money to work, and you can get started with as little as $5. Small steps now can mean big earnings later. Learn more at NavyFederal.org/save. Federally insured by NCUA.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. It's a Wednesday at 5 o'clock in the morning, which is why you got the podcast pulled up. You're listening to it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, and maybe you're even watching on YouTube, because we're doing all of this on YouTube now for you guys. We've got a Patreon question, and it's a little less deep than last week's. What is your favorite prank or gag that you've ever pulled on someone?
Dude, I took one of those industrial size shredder bags and I cut it open and put tape across the hole and hung it in my buddy's, he's actually my platoon chief's locker for his birthday, and put a piece of 550 cord from the piece of tape to his door. And when he yanked that industrial, when he yanked his door open, 1,000 pounds of micro shredded paper rained down on him and inside his locker. I can't even begin it. I guarantee you that was about 7 years ago. I guarantee you there's still pieces of paper in that locker.
That's awesome.
Beat that one.
You guys want me to go?
Yeah, take it. Go. Yeah.
You know, it is the running prank in the fighter pilot world that I can't claim as my own, but it is the most hysterical moment you'll ever see a young wingman have. So when we're going up near the speed of sound and we're in the weather, the F-16 creates this thing called St. Elmo's fire. And there's so much static electricity that comes off the pitot boom and goes up over the bubble canopy. It literally looks like the jet is on fire, and it's intentionally never briefed. And inevitably you'll get the young wingman, and we're in an electrical storm for the first time, and they literally think their life is going to end. And it's not my prank, but it is one of the most entertaining things. And you guys get that, the fellowship of watching young people freak out for the first time when they get operational. So that would be mine.
Well, yeah. This has to be PG rated, right?
Whatever you want.
It's just us here and hanging out. Yeah,
so we have a lot of them. I mean, just tons of platoon ones. But I think the funniest one that really – for us was when I got back to be a budge instructor. So now this was new. So as you go into the first phase office, they have a post up there, and in there they tie this long string, because as soon as you open the door, it's like, you know, it flips it. But on the other end, I'm telling you, is this huge dildo. All right. And as soon as you walk in, it'll loosen up and it'll come to like smack you in the face as you walk into the platoon door, right? I mean, the first phase door. I'm like, you're looking at me like it's crazy, but that I didn't make that up.
No, I'm listening. I completely understand what you're saying. It's not shocking to me. I'm one of them. I'm like, yeah, I got
and
it.
So that was the thing. And so if you're unsuspecting and you know that it's going to come for a while, but I think the most funniest thing about it was the the first phase MAC chief comes in, you know, and it was set. Because it's usually set when the guys go out and do the evolutions, and they'll come back, and usually like the first instructors will come in after they start going hitting the surf, and then that thing just goes and just literally smacks in the face. The first phase Mashiv goes in, it was set, and he opens it up, and I was in there. I was just like putting in times and grabbing some, and it came down, this big dildo just smacks him in the face, and he loses balance, and he goes down. And so it's pretty funny when you see it, but beyond laughing though, so I guess it's not that funny. But yeah, it got taken down after that. But it was funny to watch the guys get hit by it though. So we're children.
I have no doubt. I was gonna go. Was the question about military prank or just prank?
Just in general, favorite right. prank.
Anytime I get asked that question, I always go right back to. I don't know if my brother and I were in high school our senior year, or we might have been freshmen in the college. Whatever, it doesn't matter. We had separate rooms upstairs, and you go up these flight stairs. If you walk straight, you went to my room. You turned to a left, you went to his, and our bathroom was in the middle. Well, I come home, he's in the shower, and I haul ass in his bedroom, man. And he had his, back in the day, remember water bed? He had this full motion water bed, had no breakers in or anything like that. Nice. I mean, it was
big time.
Yeah, so lights were all off. So I jump in there, dude. And I was a little bitty back there, but I jump in there under the pillows with my hands above my head and my feet stretched out. He had this huge headboard, right? And I'm laying there, and I tucked the pillows back in, hiding down in there, dude. And you can hear him in the shower. He's doing his routine, everything. He gets back in there. Dude crawls into bed. Still doesn't know I'm there. Has no idea. And, I mean, Russell's over. And every time you move one of the full motion water beds, it was like we were riding. I can't believe he didn't. And I was trying not to laugh my ass off, dude. But I could hear him kind of just settle in. And I used to be able to scream like you. Like a banshee. I mean,
like a woman. Like loud.
I mean, loud, dude. It's not there anymore. I was screaming so loud coming down that mountain. My voice kicked deep. But, bro, when you were talking about in the jet and that freaking St. Elmo's fire and clinging to life, when I came up, because I crunched. And I crunched with him inside of him. And I mean, imagine a cat stuck to the ceiling, dude. That's how fast he came out of that sucker, dude. I mean, he was asshole.
I thought Freddy Krueger had a hold of me. I mean, it scared the piss out of me. I've never been scared that entire life when he grabbed a hold of me. And when he screamed, I mean, it scared the bones out of my body. And I was trying to get out of that damn.
They were in a waterbed. Waterbed.
He wouldn't turn me loose. I had no idea what happened.
Because I had all the covers and the pillows. And he was in the middle of that.
Wrapped up.
Nice.
Oh, dude.
Man, that's great. Brian, thanks for the question. It always brings some good laughs. Patreon, if you guys don't know what it is, you guys can get exclusive access to behind-the-scenes footage from the show, cool swag, extra episodes, live videos, you name it, you get it. Patreon.com/TeamNeverQuit. That's where you can go. Hey, guys, we've got a great guest in store, Lieutenant Colonel Dan Rooney, Air Force fighter pilot, and a force for good. From humble beginnings above his garage, he founded Folds of Honor to provide educational scholarships for the families of fallen military members. In 13 short years, Folds of Honor has awarded over 28,000 scholarships worth approximately $135 million. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Man, I am blessed to be with three American heroes. So awesome. Thanks for having me.
I assure you, the pleasure's all ours, sir. I've got like a laundry list of questions that I want to rattle off to you, but we normally like to get into the guts of it. Before we get into the guts of it, if you could just share with us just kind of where you started, and we'll maneuver into where we are now, because I understood at a high level why you started Folds of Honor, but when I read the detailed story about the airplane, obviously, because I'm a twin. I don't think Marcus knows the depth of this story, but he will here in a second. I mean, as a twin, God bless you.
Yeah. Okay, I didn't make that connection before I chimed on with you guys. But, kind of moments of synchronicity or chance with a purpose. And I'm 47 years into this walk, and I know for sure everything is connected, right? There's no coincidence. There's no serendipity, right? It's like you are where you are for a reason. And this is really the beginning of kind of that journey of living a pretty myopic life. It was 2 feet in front of me at all times. But I'd gotten back in 06 from Iraq and ended up on a commercial airliner. This is a few months later. And I'm going from Chicago here to my day job as a PGA golf professional up in Grand Haven, Michigan. And we fly to Grand Rapids late that night. We've been delayed out of O'Hare as well as nights. I'd gone from Budweiser to coffee. I've been there so long. And finally land in Grand Rapids, pull up to the gate. The captain comes over the PA and announces that we're carrying an American hero on board, that we have the remains of Corporal Brock Buckland, who'd been killed in Iraq, and his identical twin brother, Corporal Brad Buckland, is in first class and had brought him all the way home. So the captain makes another request, kind of the standard, had like everybody to stay in their seats until Brock's remains are removed from the right cargo hold. And I watched, you know, the Buckland family on the darkest night of their lives. And his brothers were there, his parents, his wife, and his four-year-old son, as that American flag-draped coffin that we're all too familiar with on this show inched down from the cargo ramp. But it was different. And certainly, you know, seen a lot of bad things in combat. We all get that, but I'd never seen this side of war and that intimate side with the family there. And, especially his son. I'm the father of five girls. God has a sense of humor and,
nice payback
job. Yeah. My transgressions, in life. But, I watch this little boy and I'm like, man, he's 4 years old. He'd understand he's never going to play catch again with his dad or get an ice cream cone or do all the stuff that really matters in this world full of stuff that a lot of it doesn't. And so the ceremony finishes itself up and I stand up only to see that more than half the people have gotten off the plane, right? And they're nowhere to go. It's at midnight. They're going home to climb under that blanket of freedom that Corporal Brock Buckland just gave his life for. And it's really hard for me to say, but I'd never been so disappointed to be an American and like, you know, why are we doing what we're doing? People can't even stay in their seats and this kid gave his life for them. And, but I'll tell you, in that moment, I felt the hand of God on my shoulder and I would say he picks the least among us and man, do I qualify there, but he picks the willing. And, that was the inspiration, which would become Folds of Honor. And it was a couple months later that, you know, we started above our garage. And I wrote down our mission, which hasn't wavered since then. It was honor the sacrifice by educating the legacy and providing scholarships to spouses and kids who've had somebody killed or disabled. But when it started, it was just like, hey, I want to help this little boy, Jacob, who was our first recipient, who's now 18 years old. And, that was, you know, 13 years ago, the organization started and the moment of synchronicity that kicked it all off.
I've been on the planes with bringing heroes home before. And I've actually been on, I've seen it from the window and the family's down. I've been on the tarmac and I got to tell you, I honestly when I was on the plane, everybody kept their seats. I literally think I would have beat the fuck out of everybody.
I agree. And I was so glued out the window. Right. And it's midnight. So people are, we've been delayed or tired, whatever. There's no excuse. Right. But I'm glued out the window. And so when I turn back and I'm like, oh my God, where did half the people go? It's probably more than half the people, had gotten off because, you know, they didn't have time, man. Everybody's in it. I don't know what it is in this world we're in. Everybody's in a rush to the next thing all the time. It's just mind boggling to me how we're just so rarely present. Not making an excuse for those people. It's just the reality of the world we live in.
And that was the one thing I had learned during this lockdown was how to relax, how to slow back down. The pace we get at, it gets to going so fast. And you can normalize into anything. You kind of forget that packing 9, 10, 11, 12 things in a day, that's a lot. I mean, that's a hell of a lot of stuff. And then you get down on yourself when you don't do that many things in one day. And sometimes there's not that many things to do. That's why you're supposed to seize the day, enjoy the moment that you're in. I would literally start thinking about what we were doing next midway, whatever we were doing. And it's not that it's not that I didn't finish what I was doing. I wasn't enjoying it. And the best part's the end. Usually that's where it's supposed to be. The beginning of the story is good, but the ending's always great. And anything whatever we're doing together, it's the most important and poignant part of it because it's the culmination of everything. That I would overlook that just because the way we're designed is it's not that you're ignoring it, but you're getting ready for the next thing and prepping and making sure everyone else is squared away. And that's how we get going so dang fast. You're right. You're right. They should have kept that door locked.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's interesting too. I was doing a show the other day and someone would ask, hey, what do you think, why has Folds been successful? And it, maybe not a direct correlation, but I was like, yeah, for 13 years, I've been the last guy out of every room. And I was like, you know, pretty good motto for life. If you want to be successful, and whether you're, you know, the last guy in the basketball court, or you're the last guy in the gym, or you're the last guy out of the room at the fundraiser, good things happen when you're the last one to leave and not being always on to the next thing.
That's the way I heard it explained one time, is that no matter what kind of day you're having when you're sitting on that plane, because it's the best place to find that. Like, everyone's usually having kind of a rough day no matter what. You just look back and go, hey, man, whatever it was that was causing that rough day for you, that's the dude that's, or the lady that stood up for you when you left. And now they're in that coffin. That's how you kind of got to look at that. Big picture, that's what's happening.
So on our show, we talk about, you know, one's like greatest challenge or biggest, you know, the biggest obstacle or adversity. Obviously, having five girls, they're probably going to go up to be supermodels. I have no doubt that that's going to happen to you. So I don't know what you did as a kid, but obviously, I'm telling you. You know,
yeah. This is, McBee already said this is a G-rated show, so we're not going to go there.
Hey, you need to meet my wife's father. Well, she has five daughters. I married the eldest. So maybe there's something to it. You can write a book together.
Can you give us a little background on, so it is no joke to be a 16 pilot. You have multiple deployments and a golf pro at the same time. Still trying to figure out how that dynamic works. But give us a little history and a little background. Share with us something that it's a valuable life lesson that has catapulted you in this direction. We've got an idea where Folds of Honor went, but then we'll talk, we'll circle back around to that. But let's get that, let's give our listeners a little background on who and what. You're so lucky that you're in the Air Force. Nobody ever called you Lieutenant Dan.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was Lieutenant Dan for 4 years. and, you know, people, I went from major to lieutenant colonel last year. And now everybody calls me lieutenant again because nobody knows what a rank is in the regular world. So I'm back to Lieutenant Dan. Have you?
So he's such a big guy in the veteran space. Have you met him yet?
Oh, Gary, yeah. We just played him in a movie. I am the Lieutenant Dan. So awesome. You talked about, you know, the never quit moment. And I thought about this a lot yesterday, and mine's probably a different answer than most people give. Before I dive into my background, the things that I never quit. And I remember going and showing up, and I don't know if you guys felt this way going to SEAL training. It's obviously very different than fighter pilot training. But we go through, ours is like 2.5 years long. They spend about $8 million per pilot training us, and only 4.8% of the people will successfully complete the training. And I took my wife to Wichita Falls, Texas, and we were at Shepherd Air Force Base. And I came home after the first day of, you know, academics in our blues, and very different than what you guys go through. And I'm like, hey, babe, don't unpack the bags, because there is no way. This colonel just told us 4.8% of the people are going to make it through the program. You know, I'm an average student that played college golf at the University of Kansas. And I was, you know, just defeated day one. And I remember I was like, well, what am I going to do? And it was really the first moment in my life that I realized that I'm not capable of doing this myself. And the only thing I knew I did, I was like, well, I'm going to get up a half hour early. I must, you know, get into my morning prayer, which I'd never really done before. And so my whole life, I've gotten up 30 minutes early and I have 30 minutes of prayer time. Right. And it's just, I go through the same stuff, you know, every day. Some's a little bit different based on what's going on. And, but when I looked at my never quit moment, that's it for me. I've never quit praying. Number one. The other thing I've never quit doing is showing up in the gym. And then the third thing I've never quit is on my marriage. And I look at those as kind of the three-legged stool, where if those are in order in your life, you're probably going to be able to get through the inevitable challenges and the bad stuff that's going to happen to everybody, because it's humanity and we're going to spend a lot more time struggling and ultimately being defined by, you know, what we do on a daily basis when it doesn't go our way. So that was my never quit moment. I don't know if you ever had an answer like that or that makes any sense at all.
No, that was absolutely the first time anybody's ever said that, but it's kind of like, I don't know why anybody has not put it that into perspective. Cause like every time we ask Marcus, a question comes like, hey, inevitably, if you go back in time and fits to somebody, Marcus is the Jesus guy. You know, he's always brings up the Lord, which is great. Cause nobody else ever does that. You were absolutely the first one to hit that one on the head. Job well done.
Yeah. Because that's, I mean, that's how you get, that's how you don't quit the resilient spirit. And we'll dive into the book here in a second. But my background, I was 12 years old, a moment of synchronicity again. I met my first fighter pilot on the golf course. His name's Steve Courtright Reno. He went on to be a two-star general, but this guy literally walked right out of the movie The Right Stuff, chiseled, blue eyes, and I'm like, first man crush. You can be this cool and grown up. And he was like, yep, you want a drink of my Coors Light? And I'm like, oh, God, yes, I do. And I never stopped, you know, drinking it from that point. I was like, this is what I want to do. And I told my dad,
what are
I was
those like, guys? Man, dad. Okay. Yeah. Like, what are them dudes, right? When you, the moment frozen, and no matter what was going down at that moment, that's set. That's awesome.
It's magical.
Yeah. And so the next day, I'm playing golf with my dad, and I'm like, hey, dad, I know what I want to do. I want to be a golf pro and a fighter pilot. And I'll never forget his question to me when I announced this as a 12-year-old kid. He was like, well, do you know which way an airplane takes off? And I'm like, I think it's into the wind. He said, that's exactly right. Enough said, right? Big headwinds between those two unlikely dreams and for a 12-year-old kid to put them together. But you know, I had no idea how ultimately God would put those together for a much higher purpose in my life. But I'm still, you know, that 12-year-old kid at heart and still get to fly fighters and play golf a lot. But that's, you know, my selfish time. And on this walk and do some other stuff.
I'm sorry.
In between.
I how did you put those two together? I mean, like I get that you wanted to be a golfer and those are just two coolest things you could think of.
Yeah. Well, it was the two things I love to do. And right. Doesn't everybody tell you just man, grow up and do what you love. And I'm like, well, this is awesome. And don't be a prisoner of common assumption. You guys have gone through the same thing. We've had 10,000 people along the way tell you, oh, you number one, probably neither one of those will happen, but you got to pick one. I'm like, who says? So obviously the golf was first. I played college golf at Kansas, met my wife there, and then turned professional. And then I raised my right hand and joined the Air Force to go off to pilot training when I was 26. And got 20 years in and still flying in the reserves down at Eglin Air Force Base in Florida.
Hey, we were talking last night on the way to dinner. Is there a program where you could go in to enlist, but you say, hey, look, I'd like to go to college first. Can you pay for my university and then I'll enlist in the Navy or Army? Does it do that? We don't do it that way, do we?
No, I know. I mean, there's the concurrent programs. But yeah, there's nothing that will send you to school and then
pay it off.
Serve after. I guess you could say the service academies are a little that way.
But yeah, that yeah.
But no, that's an officer thing. I'm talking about for the enlisted guy.
Oh, I don't think so.
No.
Yeah, I know the academy. Yeah, I got that part. I get that that's a separation. But what if you're like, okay, even if I do get educated, I'll still come in enlisted and pull the sled.
No, the enlisted man is cunning and evil and will deceive you.
See, no way, for those of you who don't know, my brother turned over to the dark side. He's an officer.
Yeah, man. We had the Seaman Admiral program. I know we had that, but you had to.
It was already in.
Yeah. You're already in.
You're already in.
Yeah, I don't think there is, to be honest with you. That I'm thinking about. Yeah, we did last night. It's like, I mean,
if I pull
really
out,
know.
If I pull out for a year, you got a year in, that kind of deal. Mm.
So I read a piece somewhere that, so Folds of Honor, is there one, exactly how long? Because I'm always. I've been failing since I got out of the service and my business it's a marathon, not a sprint. And I've been in the nonprofit space too, working for 501c3s. And I see the struggle. What catapulted Folds of Honor from your garage to this? I don't think there's anyone that doesn't know what Folds of Honor serves and what they're all about.
So I've got a fun, two anecdotes for that. One, I turned to the game of golf initially. And that was right away, you know, a big thing for us. I came up with this concept called Patriot Golf Day. And as a PGA club professional, you know, I'm part of a group of 28,000, you know, men and women that run the golf courses around the country. So we're not playing for money on TV anymore. And so I reached out to the president of the PGA of America and I'm like, hey, I got this idea called Patriot Golf Day. And I was like, what if we over, it was Labor Day weekend. It's now Memorial Day weekend. Over that weekend, we had golf courses register and we let golfers play the most heroic round of the year and make a donation to Folds. And I always said, it's crazy. I was like, if you swing for the fences, there the least amount of people are out there. And so I reached out to Jim Nantz, who emailed me back. I still have that email on my desk. And the president of the PGA of America, Brian Whitcomb. And they were like, man, that sounds like a great idea. And obviously there was a lot between yes and getting that airborne, but we had a really solid fundraiser right away. We raised $1 million inside our first year. But man, I didn't know a soul, right? I would no connection to any of these people. And then so golf started and I was feeling good about myself. And I'm like, dude, I love the Budweiser commercials. And B's been up to St. Louis with me. And but I cold called Anheuser-Busch. I flew on Southwest Airlines, which is a great supporter of Folds now. They help cover all of our travel.
Great airline.
And, things but awesome. I cold called them. And I ring the front doorbell and they're like, who are you? What do you want? And I explain the foundation to this guy that comes out. His name's Rocky Sickman. And Rocky now works for Folds, but he was head of military sales there. But he was also a Marine and been a hostage in Iran for 444 days. So we're like kindred spirits. I'm like winning cues. This is the best meeting ever. I'm going to get this thing done. And at the end of it, he looks at me an hour later and he was like, hey, man, I got to set you straight. He's like, we get hundreds of requests a day from charities across the country. And no offense, they're not run above people's garages. You're a great American. Keep doing what you're doing. But he said, this will never, never, never happen. There were three nevers at the end of our conversation. And so, you know, I leave their tail between the legs. And I'm always a big believer that I talked to this before, but we're going to be defined by what we do when it doesn't go our way every day, multiple times. And so I kind of regrouped a couple of days later and I went back every 6 months to St. Louis for the next 3 years. And I rang that same doorbell, never had an appointment, and finally got a meeting with Dave Peacock, the CEO, who was a University of Kansas grad like me. And I'll never forget what he said at the end of the meeting. He said, hey, I make it a best practice not to get in the way of God's will. We'll figure out something to do with Folds of Honor. So that was 8 years ago and they've donated about $20 million from Budweiser to us. So I mean, what a great way to serve our country, drink beer and change the life of a military family. But when you look at that, you know, in Folds and our success, we've just been so blessed to have so many people come along the walk and support us in awesome ways. But it's hard. Right. Every single day I'm getting way more no's than yeses. And but when you meet the families that you help and you see the impact that you're having on them, that's the, you know, that's the, what keeps you leaning into the wind, I guess.
Tell that very so well. I mean,
it speaks a lot to persistence, too. You know, it speaks a lot to the fact that
those are the best stories. When you got to keep going back. Like, man, I went back and back so many times. Every time I get knocked down, and finally, it just went. That's how it happens.
Well, you guys, I mean, you get that. I mean, you talk about a resilient spirit. If the most successful people in the world are the people that are the best at handling life when it's not going their way.
True.
I'm convinced, and the rest of the world quits.
Yeah, I think it's somebody else to handle it. Well, like with us in our world, I mean, they put us in the situations where Man, you got to handle it. You quit, you're not in the program. And that, since that wasn't an option, you learn how to deal with it.
Yeah, I had one of my role models told me one time, he told me this actually multiple times because I'd always come walking back with my tail between my legs. And he's like, if you ever walk into a room and somebody tells you no, the first words out of your mouth is say, don't say no, let's work on how to get to yes. Mm-hmm. I had never heard that before. And it literally transformed my life, especially when it comes to the nonprofit space, when everybody's like, I got a thing for you, man. I'd rather give some money to the dying cat Foundation, which I'm not taking anything away from that. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Without freedom, the Dying Cat Foundation ain't in business. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. You know, it's the, you know, the person's true characteristics will always shine through in moments of adversity. That's who they really are. You know, so add a little stress,
And if they don't believe in you, especially.
Yeah.
If they don't believe in you, then if you're the one that keeps, if they're going to hinge it on you, and you're the one that keeps coming back and shows them that, finally they'll be like, all right, man, if he's got it, then, because that's what ultimately they're doing, they're investing in you.
Yeah.
So you're going to keep coming back and keep taking this.
And yeah. Remain calm. Remain calm and cool and collected.
Who did, who hung your Presidential Volunteer Service Medal on your, hung it on your suit around your neck?
43. Very cool story too.
Let's hear it.
I love them.
As a fellow Texan, you guys will love this. You guys are Texans. I'm not. He's a Texan. That's what I meant. I'm in Oklahoma. I'm a little north of you guys, but I'm still, as my neighbor. My neighbor lives on 5,000 acres over here. His name's Garth Brooks, and he calls it the land of common sense, which is Oklahoma. Texas is getting a little goofy right now.
Well, tell him we said howdy.
No, the very short version of the story is I was getting ready to deploy in 08 to Iraq, and my phone rings, and I've got my wife on a little 2-day vacation, and it's the president, and it's not him, it's his top aide. He said, hey, you know, we realize you're getting ready to deploy. They have my cell phone, right? And he was like, but the president's going to be on the West Coast next week, and he will stop through Tulsa on the way back home if you have time to meet him. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And so
tell him no.
Yeah. Faster, funnier. He stops, and you know, it's the governor and everybody's out there, and I'm at the back of the line. I'm a major in the Air Force, and that plane lands and the dudes run out the back of it. It's all spit shine, just like the movies. And this guy comes out the back and he goes down the line. He's like, hey, he's here to see you, Major Rooney. And it was one of the coolest moments of my entire military career when I got to salute my commander in chief, President Bush 43, you know, a week before I was going to Iraq. And, you know, forget the award. I'm not a big award person. Tell me what you've overcome in life. That's the coolest part of our journey. But he was like, hey, man, when you get back, I'm going to be done being president. I want to play golf. And I figured he was like, whatever. And sure enough, it was 8 months later, he called me up and said, hey, do you want to come down to Texas, to Dallas to play golf? And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, can I bring a couple friends? And he was like, yeah, I got a rule, though, no assholes.
Roger that.
And I'm like, perfect. And so I took my dad and another guy, and have been really good friends since. We played golf a few months ago in Dallas. And man, very, very cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. We had a great experience with him when we were doing Marcus's thing. And this is how cool he was. He walked up to our mother and was like, Miss Latrell, is there anything I can do for you? And my mother reached up and grabbed him on both sides of the face, just like this. Like a grandmother would do to her baby, looked him square in the face. He goes, quit playing roulette with my sons. And you want to, I think Mark's that book shit ourselves at the same time. We're like, oh my God.
I literally just shit myself right now. How vivid that moment was.
Here we are begging to go on deployment, put foot to ass for country. My mother literally just scuttled both our careers. We're going to be guarding the Whataburger.
Gives you chills. Only your mother can say that to the President of the United States.
No. Yeah, well, exactly.
How did he respond?
He didn't say a damn word. That's what I'm talking about, man.
Yeah, he said, yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. I remember when they turned around and walked away, actually, for a little while. She did that to the CNO of the Navy one time. I was standing there, and he goes, ma'am, I'd just like to thank you for giving me your son. She's like, I didn't give you anything. They're on loan. That's probably why I wound up getting my ass whipped my whole career, because of that comment. Then she said it to the press, and now we don't get nothing.
Now we're podcasters.
Thanks, now I'm a pod.
Was the People magazine thing pretty cool?
No, nothing.
I know you've done that.
Nothing. It's all good. Nothing. I say good. Yeah.
I thought that was pretty legit, though.
Well, now you got to talk about it.
No, I don't. I would look at those things. I was like, get it. You've got the podcast. It's a great platform to preach the bigger message. If someone will give you a microphone, then you're like, yeah, let's talk about what really matters.
That's just plugging into the matrix.
But it spreads, and you look at it, it spreads the word so we can raise donations. I mean, that's when we have something fun that pops up like that. It's like, oh man, this is cool. Cause we're going to get to spread the word for Folds and change some more lives.
Man, the biggest thing is how much I'm still having a good time doing it. Some of the madness that we have to go through in our career. And I don't really even look at it like madness when we're in, cause when in the military and we're doing our thing. I mean, that's kind of a competition between us who can get in the worst situations and do the coolest things. That's how you get your nicknames and everything, which by the way, yours is what's your call sign?
Noonan.
All right, tell that story.
And I don't know how to you guys have to tell me how you get your call.
I know what that is.
No.
We know what that means.
Yeah. But we have no say in it.
No, absolutely not.
How you guys get it. But it's like you get through this training program, and your first year and a half, you get a name tag that says FNG on it. Yeah. I mean, you're the lowest form of life. And you finally get your call sign and from Caddyshack, the main character in Caddyshack, Danny Noonan.
Yeah, for sure.
That's, I don't know, man. That doesn't sound okay.
So here's that with yours.
Yeah. All right. So here's what I always heard. All right. I always heard you get your call sign in the military. If you walk up to somebody and they got a good one, like Viper or Iceman or something like that, no one likes that dude.
As a tool. The cooler your call sign, the bigger loser you guarantee you are.
If your name is Shithouse Running or something like that, dude, that is the guy you want. That's right. Right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's what I was told by y'all. I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, we had a guy that was working with us. His call sign was Shylock, and I was like, "Man, that's double tough." I was like, "What's that stand for?" He's like, "Shit in lieu of combat." he took off on a sortie and had to go to the bathroom so bad he came back to the carrier and landed and took a dump. They're like,
"The best, right?" Those you're loved. Man. It's like when your bros drunk dial you at 2 o'clock in the morning. No higher compliment can you ever be paid in the military.
Absolutely.
Why don't you tell our listeners about Fly Into the Wind?
You bet. So new book just came out 2 weeks ago. We talk about resilience, and really that's what this book is about. It's about engineering a code of resilience in your life. Cause I think that's what's going to ultimately lead you to fulfillment, not necessarily happiness. I'm not a big believer in happiness because you wake up lots of days and you're not happy. And I don't think that's what God wants us to be is happy. I think you're supposed to use your talents to make a difference, to be fulfilled. And I was able to, engineer a code of living that I outline in the book about finding daily fulfillment. And it's basically 10 things, lines of effort that I do each and every day. But the title of the book is a big piece of it, Fly Into the Wind. Right. And as fighter pilots, we always take off into the wind because we need resistance to ascend. And I don't think our lives are any different. And so often when people face challenge and resistance in their life, they, you get into this self-pity mode and it's like, hey, why me? And I wrote this book, in a pretty dark period that I went through for 6 or 7 years of my life and, struggled at home, was going bankrupt on a golf course that I built, Folds was teetering on whether it was going to make it or not. And it just, the devil was coming after you at every turn. And these weren't problems that I could solve on Friday. So I'm like, what can I engineer and create a little bubble around myself based on, lessons that I had learned growing up, incorporating things that every day I could execute to know that, man, at least I'm being the best version of myself, regardless of the chaos going on around me. And I think, Navy SEALs, and I'll throw you guys in this, but fighter pilots, if we have one skill, it's probably being able to take in copious amounts of information at very high speed and prioritizing what matters. And in the world that we all live in right now, Marcus, you were talking about this earlier, is, man, we're all drinking through a fire hose. It's coming at us faster than we know what to do. And at its core, this book is for people to look at and be able to prioritize, hey, what really matters in my life? Where am I assessing that? And where do I want to get to? And, my hope and prayer is that inside the book, the lessons that, I've learned in my life, a lot of them the hard way, that it can help people evolve and understand that, having a resilient heart is going to define you, in your life. And, When you're challenged and when you're struggling, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's not fun, but I think it's God's greatest gift to us to evolve. And, you know, I just pray that, it makes it to a lot of people. I had no idea this was going to be COVID in 2020 and everybody's getting the beat down that won't stop, this year. And just, you know, hopeful that it's going to reach the people that need it. And, they'll take a couple things away that might have a lasting impact on their life.
Amen, brother.
Where can people get the book?
Anywhere you can buy a book. So Walmart, Target, Amazon.
So unfortunately, you're going to have to say that what that is too.
Sam's Club, all that. Let me tell you, you guys will appreciate this. I'll talk about a couple lines of effort in the book. I talked about one synchronicity already. One of the other lines of effort in the book is called parasitic drag. And this is probably, you know, my biggest paradox of life, me against me every day, but parasitic drag. In 1947, Chuck Yeager broke through the sound barrier and so flew faster than the speed of sound, and they could not break through. And they finally realized that the edge of the wing and the X1 that they were flying wasn't in the proper shape. And they removed basically parasitic drag and they broke through the speed of sound. And I look at our lives in a very similar way. And it's a book, you got to be very honest with yourself, right? When no one's around and you know in your heart of heart, but what is the stuff in your life that is holding you back from getting to that place that you know you could and you should be in your heart? And it's, you know, different for everybody. Whether it's, you know, alcohol or it's social media, or you got these toxic relationships in your life. I talk a lot about forgiveness in this chapter, some stuff that I really struggled with in my life that you have to let go of it. And the other part of that science and parasitic drag is you got to replace it with something too. I can't say, okay, I'm not going to drink my four beers tonight and I'm just going to quit. I've got to figure out something else to do. I'm going to take Bravo on a walk during this period where I usually go to the refrigerator and drink beer. And, you know, we're all, everybody on this call today, we are routine, habitual animals, right? I mean, that is who we are. We thrive on that and reprogramming those healthy routines in our lives. And that whole concept of parasitic drag, I think, is one of my favorites in there. And then my other one, that's the last line of effort, is go before you're ready. And I learned this one as an F-16 pilot. We only got four rides with an instructor, and the fifth ride is solo in a $45 million supersonic jet. And I remember sitting in this jet and I literally knew what half the buttons and switches did. And they're like, hey, don't worry. You're not ready to kill anybody. We're just trying to teach you to fly it. And it's in Phoenix, and I go fly, and it's in the summer. I remember landing safely, I come back and I put the canopy up, and it's like 110 outside, and it feels like a cold breeze is hitting me. And you realize, you know, just how hyper focused and the pressure you were feeling in that moment. But that concept of go before you're ready, I mean, hit me like an epiphany in my life. And I looked, you know, at all the times we hold ourselves back from doing something, waiting for that perfect time, or the world says, hey, you can't do this, becoming a prisoner of common assumption. And those are, you know, probably two of my favorite topics in the book. If you can get rid of the stuff that's holding you back, and then you just have the courage and the reckless faith to go in life, it's a powerful combination.
And I needed that advice like 6 years ago when I got out of the military.
I know. I was just thinking, I was like, man, I feel like I'm in class. Like, I don't want to say anything because I feel like I'm in class.
They just like taking notes. It's like,
oh damn. Come on. You guys are the most successful three people I know.
I totally
what does that tell you? What does that tell you? Hey, we hang out, dude. I like a bit with you plenty of times. I was like, man, you've been sitting on this for a while or what?
Hey, I sent you a book, Marcus. Did you get it?
I did. Thank you very much.
All right.
Yeah, I didn't get my copy, but that's cool. Probably got lost.
I will your way.
That's why I didn't say anything in the beginning, because if he gets upset. Way to go, you upset Mojo.
Dan, if you could leave the listeners with one piece of never quit advice, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of that in your book, and I'm sure people are going to get that, But if you could leave people that are listening to the show today with one piece of advice, what would that be?
I just, man, for me, it goes back to what I talked about before is, if you want more blessings in our lives, and I think every bit of humanity would say, yeah, man, I want to be more blessed. That you got to bring God or whatever it is, whatever you believe in, with you every day. And I talk about that in the book as well. It was a major transformation for me, and probably the most courageous thing I've ever done as an adult is, I started living a faith forward life and bringing my faith into every interaction I have. And that's, you know, if you ask me how I'm doing, I'm going to tell you, hey, I'm blessed. And I'll look you in the eye. And I mean, that stops the barista at Starbucks in their tracks. And just those little moments or my voicemail is, you know, I'm out living the day the Lord has made, but every interaction I have, I will bring my faith to it. And it has been transformational in my life, and went from, you know, one of the darkest periods of struggle that felt like everything was coming apart. And that was probably the biggest thing that I did. And it was just like a light switch for me. I was like, you know, God, I need you. And it was like, if you need me, you need to take me with you into battle everywhere you go. And I started doing that. And it's been just a tremendous blessing for me. And I've watched this very simple linear equation in life that's like, hey man, I want to be fulfilled. I want to be blessed. I want to be happy. You got to have God in your life if you want that.
Well said.
Yeah, again, I got nothing.
He's speechless.
I don't want to interrupt.
Dan, where can people follow you? I want to just kind of give the floor to you to just plug anything you've got going on, the book, all of the things.
I think we talked about the book, Fly Into the Wind. You can get that out on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Target. Anywhere you want, and kicking part of that back to benefit Folds. That's my other thing. You know, we sent about 5,000 people to school this year, military families, about 25 million out the door. But we had our longest waiting list in history, about 3,000 qualified applicants. And if nothing else on this, that's the most important. Check out foldsofhonor.org. And, you know, you guys get it. McBee's helped us out a ton with Folds, and we're really grateful for that. But we're doing it the right way. We got 90 cents of every dollar going out the door to fund scholarship programs, a perfect rating on Charity Navigator, a small team here in Owosso. So I would say if you want to thank somebody in the military for their service, take care of their family. And so that's awesome. And then I think I've got like 11 followers at Lieutenant Colonel Dan Rooney. So you can find me out there preaching God and country on my social media.
Well, all of us will get like 14, 15, I guess.
McBee has, you guys have millions. Anyway, it's a blessing. You guys are heroic, and I really feel humbled to be in your company, and I listen to the podcast and love it. It's just really cool to be on. So thank you for that.
You bet.
Definitely.
Need to have you as a guest, guest host. You can come in on virtual and just drop the knowledge you got. Because me and Marcus tend to stumble over things sometimes.
So next time I was like, well, that happens to be outside of my pay grade, but I have somebody on speed dial right here.
I got this guy right here.
Noonan. Get Noonan in here.
We needed him on that question this morning.
You know the favorite thing Navy SEALs say? Two words. Cleared hot.
Oh, yeah.
We need you on the question we had this morning.
Don't you?
Yeah, I did a ton of work with you guys in 2008. I ran a two-ship of alert out of Balad. And every evening I'd pick up the phone. I only knew him as Fred. And he was, I don't know which team it was. They wouldn't tell us any of that stuff, but man.
You want to know? Because I was there in 2008 in Balad.
No way. That total synchronicity.
There it is right there. Yeah.
Crazy affirmation of the path.
Ta-da.
There it is.
Yeah. What months were you there?
I was there for 6 months, spring to fall, whatever.
Okay.
And in the heat of the summer, and then the monsoons hit in the fall. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. The whole base flooded. I didn't know that was possible in Iraq. But man, I'll tell you, watching you guys do what you do up there in my little cockpit at 30,000 feet with my, you know, temperature controls going, and coming out of helicopters and the ground assaults and picking up high value targets and all that. I mean, massive respect for what you guys do.
Yeah, that was a good deployment. Thanks for coming on. We're honored. Actually, I just over the top honored to meet you and talk to you over. I hate this virtual. Wish we could have had you in the studio, but I'm sure
round two at some point, right?
Yeah, we need to get out here.
Yeah, round two, and I'll Marcus, I'll text you, and we get another address. Send a book. It's good, good Christmas reading for you. Slow down a little bit over Christmas.
Yeah, and, yeah. Go play some
golf.
I think
you'll enjoy it.
Nice.
McBee, I'll fire you off a copy. I know where you live.
Yeah.
Two hole in ones. That is insane. Well, podcast by saying,
I'm telling you, man, they're luck. But also, it's like people are like, how do you have two? It's like, well, COVID's going on. The golf courses are open.
And of course, they're luck.
Yeah. It's like, dude, it's like the first one was a sculled shot. It was just as bad as it bounced three times, shot over. I'm like, well, that's going to be in the back bunker or farther. So I started looking for golf balls. Even before I went up there, and then I'm like, damn, where's this damn ball? What in the back bunker? Wasn't anywhere. And then I'm like, you know that little voice in your head that's not your own that says, maybe you should check the hole. And I'm like, all right, fuck. So you go check the hole, and like there it was. I'm like, you got to be shitting me. And the second one, I was just with the group, and it was just a bounce. It's like, boom, and it went in, and it was just crazy, you know. But also, I'm golfing every day. That's five chances. Actually, you have five chances. It's five par threes a day. That's 35 chances a week. And you go in every week. So after a while, if you actually start to hit the green, one might accidentally go in.
Why do you, dude, why do you crunch the number at golf?
That's math.
Dude, I don't know. What are you even doing?
What is happening?
What are you doing back there?
Dan, how many do you have? How many holes do you have, Dan?
Two.
There it is.
You same as McBee. I'm a pro. I've played my whole life. So screw that math. Yeah.
Johnny Utah, give me two.
That math doesn't equate when there's that much distance and chance. And it's not. It's not.
People were just like, I don't know what to tell you, man. And I always photograph the ones that almost go in. So it's, I almost had one out in an old hickory. Out in Tennessee when I was visiting Rob O'Neill. It's like we went out there golfing. That was him as Kid Rock and Steve Smith. And the very first hole, the second hole was a par three, is 110. So I took a 60 wedge, popped it up in the back, and it rolled in. And it just literally is like an inch from the cup, you know, on the very second hole. But, you know, just the way it goes, you know. But I've missed the greens a lot, just letting you guys know. I've missed them a lot. Over my time, man. So my missed greens are far outweigh the ones I actually hit.
You're a force of nature, McBee. There's no doubt about it.
Force of nature.
Hey, Dan, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Dan. Good to see you.
Later, bro. All right.
Thanks for listening to the show. Let us know what you think. Where could people follow you? You can follow us on social media, teamneverquit.com/social. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, wherever you get your podcasts. We got new podcast gear, Never Quit flags, hoodies, all in stock. Make sure you guys join us on Patreon. Patreon.com/teamneverquit. Make sure to leave us a review on iTunes. We'll see you guys next week.